pull it together. Despite the bloating of putrefaction, he can tell that in life she had probably been slim, with pale skin now mottled and marbled with green veins. She is dressed well, checked shirt, fitted jeans and leather boots. Telling her age is difficult, mainly because most of the top of her head is missing. Well, not exactly missing. He can see chunks of it stuck to the wall and the bookcase and the cushions. Not much doubt about who pulled the trigger. The shotgun still rests in her lap, bloated fingers bulging around it. Quickly, Gary assesses what must have happened. Gun inserted into her mouth, pulls the trigger, bullet exits slightly to the left, as that's where the worst damage is, which makes sense, as the gun is in her right hand. Gary is only a uniformed sergeant, and doesn't have a lot to do with forensics, but he does watch a lot of CSI. Decomposition probably occurred quite rapidly. It's hot in the little cottage. Stifling, in fact. The temperature outside is mid-70s. The windows are shut, and although the curtains are pulled, it must be creeping up to 90. He can already feel the sweat trickling down his back and dampening his underarms. Cheryl, who never loses her cool, is wiping her forehead and looking uncomfortable. Shit. What a mess, she says, with a weariness he doesn't often hear. She stares at the body on the sofa, shaking her head. Then her eyes shift around the rest of the room, lips pursed, face grim. Gary knows what she is thinking. Nice cottage, nice car, nice clothes, but you never really know. You never really know what goes on inside. Apart from the leather sofa, the only other furniture is a heavy oak bookcase, a small coffee table, and the TV. He looks at it again, wondering about the crack in the screen and why the flies are so interested in crawling all over it. He takes a few steps forward, broken glass crunching beneath his feet, and bends down. Closer, he spots the reason. The splintered glass is covered in dark, crusted blood. More has run down the screen to the floor where, he realizes, he has only just avoided standing in a sticky puddle that has spread over the floorboards. Cheryl moves to stand beside him. What's that? Blood. He thinks about the bike. The Wellingtons. The silence. We need to check the rest of the cottage, he says. She looks at him with troubled eyes and nods. The stairs are steep, creaky, and streaked with more trails of dark blood. At the top, a narrow landing leads to two bedrooms and a tiny bathroom. If possible, the heat on the landing is more intense, the smell even more repugnant. Gary gestures for Cheryl to go and check the bathroom. For a moment, he thinks she'll argue. It's obvious that the smell is coming from one of the bedrooms. But for once, she lets him play the senior officer and walks cautiously across the landing. He faces the first bedroom door, a bitter metallic taste in his mouth, and then, slowly, eases it open. It's a woman's room. Clean, neat, and empty. Wardrobe in one corner, chest of drawers by the window, large bed covered with a pristine cream duvet. On the bedside table, a lamp and a solitary picture in a plain wooden frame. He walks over and picks it up. A young boy, 10 or 11, small and wiry, with a toothy smile and messy blonde hair. Oh, God, he finds himself praying. Please, God, no. With an even heavier heart, he walks back out into the corridor to find Cheryl looking pale and tense. Bathroom's empty, she says, and he knows that she is thinking the same thing. Only one room left. Only one door to open to reveal the grand prize. He angrily swats away a fly and would have taken a steadying breath if the smell hadn't already been choking him. Instead, he reaches for the handle and pushes the door open. Cheryl is too tough to be sick, but he still hears her make a retching noise. His own stomach gives a good solid heave, but he manages to fight the nausea back down. When he thought this was bad, he was wrong.